This is Radio Influence.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 105 at Bellator 172 took place this past weekend as the UFC event was headlined by Derek Lewis extending his winning streak to six fights with a knockout victory in the second round against Travis Brown. And the Bellator event was headlined by Patricky Pitbull Friday scoring his seventh knockout inside the Bellator cage as he defeated Josh Thompson in the second round. We are going to recap both fight cards on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I will give our thoughts on everything that happened during UFC Fight Night 105 and Bellator 172, including the heavyweight bout between Fedor Emelianenko and Matt Mitrione being canceled just moments before the start of Bellator 172 due to Mitrione being unable to compete due to medical reasons. Now, before we get into what happened this past weekend, I'll let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. And that link is also available on RadioInfluence.com. Daniel, it was an interesting weekend in MMA. On the preview podcast, you predicted that we would lead this podcast off by talking about Fedor Emelianenko. And while I do not believe there is a wrong answer, well, should we first talk about Derek Lewis, his knockout, and amazing post-fight interviews in the Octagon and FS1?
We do not need to start this with Fedor because he did not fight this weekend. Let's talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Derek Lewis. You have been early on Derek Lewis. You really pointed out to me his social media presence a long time ago about how ridiculous this guy is, and not everybody is going to love it. Obviously he's going to at times cross some politically correct lines, but look, man, Jason, I woke up this morning, all right, last night there was a marquee NBA trade, they're talking about that on SportsCenter, but you know what else I saw on SportsCenter this morning? Derek Lewis talking about how he had to go poo-poo. So things are working, Jason. I think they are certainly working. If you have a Fight Night main event on Fox Sports 1, being on SportsCenter for a small portion of time.
First off, did you see the video of DeMarcus Cousins being told he's been traded?
I saw the headline where it's like, you won't believe the four words DeMarcus Cousins said. What did he say?
He's basically just doing like a media scrum. Uh-huh. And then a guy comes up to him, whispers, and I think he said, oh, really? Okay. And then he starts telling us, you know, I love New Orleans. I think New Orleans is a great city.
Oh, that is phenomenal.
And then I saw his manager put a picture where, like, you know, they're walking up to a private jet and they're like, so where are we supposed to go?
I mean, yeah. You got to go back home and pick up your stuff. I mean, this was a really weird trade. I think this was a really weird sports weekend. And it's kind of crazy because, like, that's all you're going to see on ESPN from start to finish, that in spring training. But just to like sneak in a little spice of mixed martial arts, I think is a win-win.
Hey, anytime you have MMA coverage on SportsCenter, that's a good thing.
ESPN showing some love to Todd Grisham. And, you know, I know he worked at ESPN for a period of time, and his first event at UFC, they're going to give him some love.
Hey, maybe you're right there. But, I mean, look, not just Derek Lewis, and obviously we'll talk about the fight here because, you know, obviously he said he needed to do a number two. I don't know how many people actually believe him about that in terms of those kicks at Travis Brown. But, of course, you know, he had mentioned the domestic violence accusations that had been thrown at Travis Brown in his past by his ex-wife. He mentioned it in his pre-fight interviews, and he also mentioned in his post-fight interviews, also told Ronda Rousey to holla at him. I don't think that's going to happen for Derek Lewis. We also heard that he doesn't want to talk about fighting for 3 months because I believe the direct quote was, I've been training too much and having too much sex. I think that was the line that they had.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole, like, the thing that I just, like, as this interview is just going on, I'm sitting in my office watching, have FS1 on, and I'm just laughing. I'm just like, this is just comedy gold. And then he goes on FS1 with a small miniature UFC belt, calls himself the interim champion, and then at the end of it, Karen Bright goes, so how are you going to celebrate this victory? He's like, oh, I think I'm going to have some wine and cheese. I'm going to put my pinky finger up. I'm like, oh, Derek Lewis, don't change, man. But I will say this. I think that you mentioned Derek has a personality that it could rub some people the wrong way. But this is a guy that has taken full advantage of social media to get his name out there, to get people to understand who he is. I think if you're UFC, you got to get behind Derek Lewis at this point.
Yes, this guy is simply interesting when he moves his mouth. And that is something that is very, very rare among a lot of the top fighters in the UFC. He is simply gold for the social media era, because every time he does a post-fight interview from this point forward, I think we're going to buzz about it. We're going to talk about it. And to have that go in conjunction with just a phenomenal fight style, I mean, that main event with Travis Brown was just an exciting heavyweight fight. You don't normally see that in the heavyweight division. A lot of times you see real dominance early on in a quick finish or potentially a sluggish fight. But this one was back and forth. I mean, in this one, Derek Lewis did show some issues. I don't think the poop was the issue. I think it was he just did not react well to those body shots. And that is going to be in the playbook for every single opponent he faces from this point forward. I mean, you have a lot of guys that are capable of doing serious damage to the body between Verdum and Overeem and Junior Dos Santos. But at the end of the day, you got a guy in Derek Lewis who is, what, a top seven, top six, top five type heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
He is incredibly exciting in the cage, and he has really, really separated himself in terms of the extracurricular activities, Jason. So the UFC, without a doubt, when you look at the landscape of their stars, they have something very, very easy to harvest here in terms of star potential. And I don't know what the strategy would be, but you got to have some type of strategy. I mean, if you're the UFC, Jason, what would be your general game plan to kind of help market Derek Lewis?
I'm trying to get him on every popular radio show and podcast around the country. I mean, because this guy just has a personality. I mean, if you're a radio host or a podcast host and you're not an MMA show and they come with you with Derek Lewis, I mean, I think if you're a UFC, you just give them various, you know, video packages of him and say, hey, do you want this guy on your radio show? I think that's one way. You maybe try to get him, you know, on certain television shows. I mean, you know, maybe you try to get him, you know, on First Take or maybe even, you know, Undisputed on FS1. Try to, you know, sell this guy's personality out there a little bit more. But I do want, you know, you talk about the deficiencies that we walk away from UFC Fight Night 105 with Derek Lewis on. First off, the body shots. I mean, you know, whoever Derek Lewis fights next, they're going to be going looking at that body. But I think the other part of it is, and it's a deficiency that we knew coming into this fight, and once again it showed on Sunday night, was the cardio of Derek Lewis. I mean, that fight's over, and he is just laying on the mat, you know, because he's just so exhausted, you know, and how much of that was those kicks that Travis Brown was landing, because I thought up until the sequence of where, you know, where Derek hurts Travis, I thought this was one of the best performances we had seen from Travis Brown.
Yeah, that should not get lost in the shuffle, right? Is the fact that heading into this fight, there was a lot of negativity surrounding the way Travis Brown has looked a lot in some of his recent fights. And I do think, despite this loss, Travis Brown looked very good early on. He looked renewed. He looked like he really had a nice formula, and he looked comfortable. His intent was there, and a lot of what he did made sense in terms of strategy and action. So I think if you're looking forward, projecting forward, there should be a lot of confidence in Travis Brown potentially getting his hand raised in the next fight, because I would imagine the level of opponent's going to be a pretty decent step down from what we just saw. I mean, this was his fourth straight loss, right?
Third straight loss.
Third straight loss, I'm sorry.
He's lost 4 out of 5, I believe it is.
Yeah, so this guy certainly needs maybe a guy outside the top 15, kind of on the peripheral, maybe 14, 15, something like that. But he looked better. But this was all about Derek Lewis. And it was a big-time Like, it seemed like Derek Lewis was mentally committed to this fight will not go another round, because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get off my stool if this one goes another round. Because he rocked Brown. Brown was able to survive, and then eventually Lewis got the finish. And it was not so much about technique, I think, Jason, as it was just about Derek Lewis committed to knocking Travis Brown out. And it was just nonstop in terms of the offensive assault. It was very much like, if I don't get this finished here, I'm not particularly sure Derek Lewis would have been able to recover from a cardio standpoint, and that would have been quite a fight if Travis Brown would have been able to swing it back in his favor. But at the end of the day, the power of Derek Lewis separates itself in a division defined by power in the heavyweight division. It came into play here, and just a phenomenal win. It's important, I think, for us to note that Mario Yamasaki had an incredibly late stoppage.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. By the way, you need to go to Travis Brown's Wikipedia page first off. Mm-hmm. You need to see what it has in the notes for the Derek Lewis fight. So while you're looking that up, I'll mention the fact that Travis Brown is now 2-5 in his last 7 fights. There's 2 wins: Brendan Schaub, Matt Mitrione. Of course, you know both those guys no longer in the UFC. Brendan Schaub retired, Matt Mitrione in Bellator. And you look at his losses: Fabricio Werdum, 2 losses to Fabricio, both by decision, 1 in a 5-round fight, 1 in a 3-round fight. Then that TKO loss to Andrei Arlovsky, then the TKO loss to Cain Velasquez, and now, of course, Derek Lewis by knockout. But have you made it to the Wikipedia page there, Daniel?
Yeah. It says in the notes of his Derek Lewis fight of the night, period, lost his soul. That has to have been up there for like several hours at this point in time. I mean, it's 8:13 in the morning where I'm at, 9:13 where you're at. Someone at Wikipedia did not see that line. That is phenomenal. Lost his soul. That
gotta love Wikipedia.
Yeah, gotta love. Did you just happen to see that?
Yeah, I just happened to see that. I when you mentioned about, you know, what the record was for Travis Brown, I just want to kind of double check that. I was make sure he lost his last 3 fights. I saw that. I just started chuckling in my head.
What percent chance would you put that Derek Lewis himself edited Travis Brown's Wikipedia in the middle of the night?
How many cocktails do you think Derek Lewis had last night?
How much wine, Jason? How much wine and cheese? He's a classic. Well,
he admitted that, you know, and he's talked about this story before, but when he took this fight, he said his coaches called him and he was drunk. He said he had drank a bunch of Bud Lights, and they asked if they wanted to fight against Travis Brown. He said yes.
You look at a guy like Derek Lewis, and I think you have to ask yourself, how many Bud Lights must this man drink to even feel a buzz?
I don't know, but you know, one of the things about Travis Brown, I'll get your take on this. I kind of feel like Travis did not want to publicly come out and say, "I'm no longer working with Edmund Tervurdian." But we clearly saw the differences in Travis Brown in this fight in comparison to his past couple fights, as you know, he did his entire camp in Las Vegas with Ricky Lundell and Ray Sefo, and you could definitely see the Ray Sefo impact on him in this fight.
Yeah, you really could. I mean, and it's worth noting in terms of striking defense, Derek Lewis presents more opportunities than I think you're going to get out of Werdum and Velasquez. But at the end of the day, you just imagine Derek Lewis isn't inside that cage, and you just look 100% at what Brown is doing, and there's a pretty big difference in the style and the confidence and just the general game plan you saw there. And poor Edmund, he's not even in the building. Well, I'm sure he was there, but he's not even
Glitch, Glitch.
He's not even in the corner, and we're still like, you know, Edmund really sucks. But I mean, it's, look, man, the proof is there. I don't know what it's going to take for Edmund to really rebound from the narrative. Wow. Like, he's going to have to create another fighter that's going to have to come out of his camp and have a dramatic amount of success and showcase real good fight IQ, I think, for us to shift, because
it's going to be a long time.
It's going to be a long time. It is. And just what we've seen out of Brown, the fall of Rousey, things have not been going good for Edmund. And even when he's out in the corner, Jason, it's kind of become clear that there's some issues in terms of training with that guy and him piecing together a game plan. So it's hard, by the way, for a guy to get knocked out in the second round and for us to kind of still be like, you know what? He did look good. But I think that's the case with Travis.
Here's my question. What did Travis Brown do to Mario Yamasaki?
Yeah. And here's the thing about that stoppage. So it was both late, very late. But when Travis Brown was clearly knocked out, he was knocked out, and Mario Yamasaki did not move in very quickly. I mean, he was lackadaisical. And after being 100% unconscious, basically, Lewis landed two more ground punches on Travis Brown. And that was just, not only was he late, but just the lack of reaction, I thought, from Yamasaki, a veteran ref. I mean, this was a dangerous stoppage, because there's a short list of people that hit harder than Derek Lewis, and that list may include absolutely nobody. So this was awful, and this is a guy we've seen time and again in Mario Yamasaki. It does seem like, when you see the reaction, though, that Yamasaki has certainly lost. He doesn't have a whole lot of support nowadays. He doesn't really have that respect that you see out of some of the other referees in terms of reputation, in Herb Dean, John McCarthy. And it's largely, I would assume, due to a lot of marquee failures. And here we had another one.
If you got your phone in front of you, I just text you a photo. And this comes from Mike Baum's Instagram account. And I just want to get your reaction to the photo. And what do you think the caption is of Mario Yamasaki?
This is a phenomenal picture of Derek Lewis staring down a completely unconscious Travis Brown, with Mario Yamasaki looking at Travis Brown. And what do I think Mario Yamasaki's thinking about? He's probably thinking about, like, whether or not he DVR'd, you know, Kitchen Confidential or something. Like, he clearly, in this fight, was not particularly concerned about Travis Brown or this fight. I mean, what do you think Mario Yamasaki was thinking?
I have no idea. I mean, do you think that photo ends up, like, in Derek Lewis's home somewhere? He blows that photo up, and it's like a career highlight for him?
Yeah, I'm sure this photo got plenty of social media traction, but this is just an amazing photo, especially for a dude that's not like a – maybe Mike Bond also does photojournalism, but I know he's an awesome writer. But if he's – man, this is a great picture, because it tells such a phenomenal story. I mean, the best part is Derek Lewis, I think, right? Staring down.
You think about it. I mean, he's sitting on press row, and a snap that quick, man. That's quality work.
That's called, maybe, you know, maybe I'm just gonna throw out a potentially Mike Bone was sending Snapchats to people, you know, so some ladies or something, and the knockout happened. He's like, oh wait, let me take a picture. Maybe that's why he was so prepared. I'm not sure, Mike Bone. I don't know what you were doing, but at the end of the day, this is a phenomenal. I mean, the facial expression, Derek Lewis here, is just perfect.
It's a tremendous photo. Now, you know, I mentioned about the interview that Derek Lewis did on FS1. One of the things that they did ask him, who do you want next, and this is after he's saying, hey, I don't want anyone to talk to me about fighting for the next 3 months. He doesn't waste any time. Mark Hunt, sign me up, Daniel. Sign me up for that. I mean, that's a fight that, man, I could see you putting on Fox, but, man, I think that's got to be a co-main event of a pay-per-view. Now, that's got to say Mark Hunt beats Alistair Overeem here next month at UFC 209.
Yeah, I would be surprised if we see that fight, Jason, because I don't think he's going to beat
Alistair Overeem. You're saying it's going to be a little awkward with Mark Hunt at UFC 209 with the UFC?
Well, two things. I'm not sure we're going to see Mark Hunt fight two more times in the UFC. I'm not sure he's going to beat Alistair Overeem. And if he does not beat Alistair Overeem, it would be a massive mistake for Derek Lewis to take that fight. I mean, maybe not so much in that it's a high likelihood Derek Lewis, I would say, would beat Mark Hunt. But at the end of the day, if we have a Hunt loss to Overeem, he's going to be lower ranked than Lewis. But yeah, I mean, Jason, I mean, with Mark Hunt, the awkwardness you have surrounding that, you know, the clear apathy I think he probably has in terms of competing time and again in the UFC at this point in time, I think it's a bit unrealistic to expect him to fight like two more times. I would not be surprised. Well, first off, I'd be surprised if this fight against Overeem happens. I just, this looks like a perfect storm of the type of fight that gets canceled 2 days before. But even if it does happen, I'm not sure that we're going to see him fight again. I think it's a good call out, though. I mean, the worst case scenario for the UFC is if Derek Lewis calls out Francis Juanu, because Juanu and Lewis are the two young stars you got. And by young, I just mean these guys haven't competed against your champions, not necessarily.
Could you imagine that firefight? Because you know those two guys don't want to go to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be a great fight, but not now.
I feel like, you know, if I am the UFC, I'm trying to keep those guys on separate tracks. And to me, that's a potential title fight down the road.
Yeah, and maybe it won't be. Maybe these guys won't be able to, you know, beat the champion, become champion. But if they don't, I think you allow them to travel to the championship on separate paths, and then potentially after their championship fights, win or lose, you have a really marketable potential number one contenders fight. But for this championship belt too, I mean, when we kind of look at great heavyweight title fights, the likelihood of that one being historic in terms of just entertainment quality is so damn high. It's something to really salivate over. I'm not so sure like that. You know, Juwan, who hasn't impressed me in terms of marketability, in terms of promo ability, like talking and stuff. But the marketing of that Lewis-Juwan fight, and I do think it's certainly going to happen one day. I mean, that marketability is all about the action-packed excitement. At this point in time, I do think if we're power ranking divisions, I'm not sure, but I would say, yeah, I'm sure. I think we got to put the heavyweight division over 205.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Travis Brown, you know, in terms of what's next for him, we mentioned what's next for Derek Lewis. I could see the UFC going a couple different routes with Travis Brown. Maybe Ben Rothwell, if he loses to Fabricio Werdum later on this year. I think that's a potential name. Or otherwise, I mean, are we thinking like maybe Alexander Volkov?
Yeah, I'm thinking Alexander Volkov. I'm not really thinking Ben Rothwell. Even with the loss, because, like, again, Brown has had it tough. Verdum, Velasquez, and now Derek Lewis. I think Brown is still exciting in terms of potential the next 3 to 4 years of what he can do. And I think you really, if you're the UFC, you got to really book the next fight in Brown's perspective. I think this is a guy who deserves, not deserves, he doesn't deserve anything, but I think if you're the UFC and you're just really thinking about the marketability of your division, the long-term depth, Brown is probably a guy you want to put your chickens in a basket. I'm not sure if that's a phrase, chickens in a basket. But
put your eggs in a basket, you mean?
Put your eggs in a basket. Those will eventually become chickens. And I do think, though, if you're pigeonholing like who you think you would be excited building your division around, Brown's one of those guys. So, Jason, the Volkov type fight, something like that. When you're looking for at the 11, 12, 13 range, your Struz, your Volkov, your Daniel Olmo, I should have stopped at Volkov, your Alexei Oleinik, your Tim Johnson's, that's the type of fight that you want. I would say, Jason, I think Brown needs a win in his next fight.
But you talk about the UFC and where we're at right now, just because I have the rankings page up here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this. Nikita Krylov no longer in the UFC.
Oh.
Apparently, UFC offers a new contract, doesn't like it, decides going to go another way, comes out on Monday morning. Koji Horiguchi has signed with Ryzen. He was a free agent. I don't know what the UFC is doing these days.
No, I don't. I saw that headline. And
I mean, you're talking about Serkanov, you know, we'll see what happens here. I've kind of heard some stuff where they think the door to Serkanov coming back to UFC isn't completely closed. But, I mean, you think about for Bellator, like, I feel like, you know, as a sport, we're dying for someone to rise up and really be that competitor to the UFC. And I feel like the UFC is, like, opening the door for Bellator to say, hey, come acquire some quality talents, you know, Serkanov. You know, Nikita Krylov would be a nice addition. I would add depth to 205. You know, Horiguchi, I thought, would have been a nice addition to Bellator if they wanted to kind of get into that 125-pound division. We know what's going on with Lorenz Larkin. You know, Bellator and Larkin continue to have their conversations. I truly believe at some point we're going to hear that Larkin has agreed to terms with Bellator and that the UFC then will decide whether they want to match that contract or not. We know Ryan Bader. You know, has agreed to terms with Bellator, and just we probably will hear any day now that the UFC is not going to match that contract that Ryan Bader got for Bellator. So we're going to see Phil Davis versus Ryan Bader, and yeah, I feel like, you know, everything is peaking for Bellator, and then of course on Saturday night, unfortunately, which would have been one of their biggest events of the year, it just falls apart for him. No Fedor. You know, I tweeted this. Whether you love or hate Shel Sonnen, you got to respect the guy because he was ready to fight Fedor on literally 2 hours' notice.
Yeah, I mean, that's Chael's MO, right?
He's capitalized on the situation. King Mo was ready to step in. And then Tito Ortiz was. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. We really wondered whether Tito was really retired.
He's fighting in Bellator again.
I think it's a matter of time. Tito Ortiz, Ryan Bader too.
And that might actually be his last fight.
Ryan Bader, I think that's who you call out at first. Right when you sign with Bellator, you go, I want Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, you want the easiest paycheck you could potentially have. And, you know, we say this given Tito beat him in his last fight, but I just think it's hard to expect another Tito win against a guy like Bader. I mean, you bring something up, man. It's hard to keep track of all the guys the UFC is losing here. And I think, honestly, you're looking at, I would point to just the ownership switch. Potentially, they don't understand what the hell they're doing.
You would think with Dana White still in charge that there would be something there to this, but if you're Scott Coker, like this is a dream type situation where, I mean, you pretty much can go get whoever you want at this point.
Yeah, because you just went on TV and your co-main event was Chick Congo Ole Thompson. You need to sign these guys. And I know the reason the co-main event was that was because of something unprecedented, kidney stones, but still. That main card lacked good fighters, and there are plenty of good fighters to fight.
I have to tell you, so I'm going out to my buddy's house to watch the fights, and he just has like regular basic cable. How about Spike is not a part of his basic cable package?
That is, I mean, when you have networks changing names, in all likelihood, the trajectory is not a positive one.
Yeah, it's not good. But luckily, I have the DirecTV app, and we just mirrored my phone to his television. So that's how we ended up watching the fight. But I had to laugh at the beginning of the broadcast when Shel goes, when they're talking about the whole situation, like, well, this is why Scott Coker stacked the deck. And I'm sitting there going, stack the deck? I get you're a Bellator fighter, and you're working the Bellator commentary team. I don't think anyone is going to sit there and agree with you that they stacked the deck on Saturday night. We talked about it on the preview podcast. It was two fights that ultimately you were interested in, the main event, co-main event. And when the news came down, I was actually just finishing up my workout at the gym, and then my phone starts blowing up. And, you know, it's like, hey, what's going on here? And, of course, you start to kind of, send the text messages, and you start to kind of figure out what's going on here. You know, my first thought was I was bummed. I was like, man, I was really looking watching Fedor fight. I was interested to see, do we see a resurgence of Fedor Emelianenko, or are we going to see Matt Mitrione go out there and have the best performance of his career? So I was bummed just as a fight fan, you know, just because – and then, you know, so it made it, then it was like there was no luster for the event. It was like, it's another Bellator event. I mean, I felt like they were just like at some casino venue somewhere across the United States. It's not fair to kind of have that kind of narrative because, you know, all these, you know, fighters went out there and worked hard. I guess maybe one of the biggest benefactors of the Fedor Mitrione fight was your boy Tokov, who had a great win and got a win there over Kiko France. But, you know, there is part of you, and maybe it's because we're so used to in MMA, it's like, oh, one fight falls out, just another fighter pops up. I don't blame Fedor for not taking any of those fights that were offered.
No, Fedor should not have taken a fight that was offered. I don't know when he got
there. Where was Seth Petruzzelli?
Remember Seth, but yeah. Yeah, also, this is mixed martial arts. This is a sport. It's not a freaking pickup game, all right? And not only that, the amount of capital at risk the next time Fedor fights is tremendous because a brutal loss from Fedor's end, time to close the book. I mean, honestly, the book should be closed already, but time to close the book. The pressure should not have been on Fedor to just radically change his opponent and when you're looking at the time frame, we're talking 3 hours before the event.
Yeah, and because this was a, you know, apparently it was going on all morning where they were kind of having those conversations. And obviously it gets to a point that you have to kind of make that decision because, you know, and I tweeted this, under California state statutes, when your main event changes, you have to offer refunds at the point of purchase. And so it was basically, and those refunds are only available until once the fight card begins. So, you know, the fight card began like at, you know, I think 3:30 or 4 o'clock local time there. In San Jose, and I'm sure that not many people took advantage of those refunds. I'm pretty sure people.
When was the news announced? Like 2 hours before the event started?
45 minutes before the event.
Yeah, you see that's. I mean, look, that's BS. I mean, like, I don't know when it was clear, but you announcing. I understand it was kidney stones, but you announcing your main event is off the card 45 minutes before it's BS.
I think what was happening was they were doing everything in their power to try to make get Fedor to stay on this card. I think they were doing whatever they could.
Sold a ticket. Yeah, and then you don't tell them that's not happening until 45 minutes. I mean, that's BS.
And people may already be in the venue at that point. You know, they may already be sitting there, enjoying a friendly beverage, nice cold beverage already, getting ready for the fights. But let's be honest about the people that are there that early. They're probably there because of some of the local guys that were going to be on that card. You know, I think the fight that would have made the most sense in the world would have been Chet Congo. I mean, that would have been the fight to make, and there's ways to entice fighters to take a fight. There's ways. It's the old, how much more money are you going to pay me? To take this fight. But, you know, look, you don't blame Fedor. Scott Coker said after the event was over, they're looking at having Fedor return in May or June, in San Jose later on this year. And, we got this one question from @ChrisConta27. He goes, do you think they do Fedor Mitrione or give Fedor an easier fight or bigger name like Rampage if he stays, Mo, Tito, or Shel Son? I personally think they're going to go right back to the Matt Mitrione fight. Matt did tweet on Sunday that he peed out the kidney stone, which, of course, I saw a lot of people responding to him saying, so did you keep it as memorabilia? Maybe you're going to try to sell it? But I really think they go ahead and they rebook Fedor Mitrione.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. I mean, it's an awkward situation because you can't come down hard on anybody. Because that is very, very much okay. First off, Matt Mitrione should not be fighting with trying to pass the kidney stone. That sounds horrific. So you can't.
I've never had it, and I hope I never have it. But yeah. I've heard from people who have had a kidney stone, and they just say it's the most painful thing you can ever go through as a man.
Yeah. I would say that does not sound like a great strategy to go and compete against Fedor. So I look, it's awful luck. Awful luck. We've seen this happen at the UFC. And I think generally when they have like a weak main card and the main event goes down, we've seen them cancel events. And I think the general way we talk about these things is like, well, this is, you know, what happens when you don't stack the deck. I mean, they did not stack the deck. I mean, Chael was just lying, which is, I mean, he's good at it. He lies a lot. I mean, that's probably the biggest issue with Chael is he says so much things that aren't true that he does lose some level of credibility, but he has a great ability to market himself, so that's always a positive. But he's prone to hyperbole. So simply put, I mean, what was here was it's evident that Bellator doesn't really have a whole lot of depth. I mean, but the thing is that narrative is both true in the UFC. Can you imagine? You point to almost any UFC card. If that main event is off, 2 hours before, you're going to have a similar storyline in terms of disappointment. So, but at the end of the day, I would say this was an awful night for Bellator. It really was.
You feel bad for Bellator because
I don't though.
I do because this was going to be a huge night for them. I mean, look, we're both in the broadcast industry, and right when all this was going down, I was on the phone with somebody and the marketing side of me just came out. How much money in ad revenue do you think Spike had to refund?
I don't know.
You got to think that the ad rate card was basically sold on, well, we did this for Tito and Shale. We're expecting the same type of numbers. So you got to imagine there were some advertisers who got on that broadcast because they're expecting, you know, during the main event that there's going to be 2 million people watching. I mean, because that Spike either had to refund that money or they're basically giving them free advertisement on other programs.
That's an interesting perspective. I would assume so. I mean, I want to be interested. What I'm interested in is the viewership totals, numbers, how that was affected, because people were aware that Fedor was fighting, so maybe they just tuned in anyway and watched.
But you got to think once they realized Fedor wasn't fighting, they turned it off.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, I didn't watch the slam dunk contest, but everything I was seeing on social media was that it wasn't exactly the most exciting slam dunk contest. Apparently, there was better slam dunks in the All-Star game on Sunday night as opposed to there was on Saturday.
Yeah, no, that's true. That dunk contest was crap. It was not the best sports night, I think, for people, for sure.
Yeah, but I still think I saw that they peaked at over 6 million viewers
for that All-Star.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, I was watching the All-Star game a little bit on Sunday night. I had my iPad here in the office. I text you this. I would die if they would have called it traveling because there was so much traveling going on.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to get into this. All-Star game, the fact that the NBA All-Star game sucks is like one of the greatest crimes we have in the sporting world, okay? This is not football. This is not boxing. This is not hockey. This is basketball. You can play hard in the All-Star game, man.
They need to offer some type of incentive to get those teams or players, I should say, give them some enticement to, I don't know, play a lick of defense.
Because, dude, like, I gotta say, it would have been cool to watch these two teams actually play each other, like. And it's been like, I mean, just.
I would have rather seen a one-on-one game between Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and maybe that's something you do. You play, you lower down the, you know, you go 2-on-2 or 3-on-3. Something to change it up because, like, the potential for excitement is there. Like, but that was just crap, man. I mean, that was a poor product. No one really cares about dunks. The only highlight was the alley-oop from Russ to KD. And everything else was just so forgettable. I would say. I mean, who had worse defense? You know, them or Josh Thompson?
Man, yeah. Is Pitbull Thompson your number three takeaway from this weekend?
Number three, I would say it's close, Jason. I mean, I think you got to compare the two co-main events and say that's three and that's four. I don't know which way. I mean, excuse me. You got to compare the main event of Bellator with the co-main event of UFC in terms of three and four. I would probably put that one higher, largely due to the fact that I don't know what you do with Josh Thompson next with a fight like that. I mean,
yeah, I think going into the event, you were kind of wondering, you know, it was a big step up in competition from Josh in comparison to his first two fights in Bellator, which were against Mike Bronzulis and Pablo Villaseca, you know, and the accidental headbutt clash that did play a role in this fight. You know, but in the day, I mean, you talk about just a beautiful uppercut that may have been more of a bicep hitting the Josh as well. But I mean, knocked him out. Huge win for Patricky Pitbull, and God bless Patricky Pitbull. Takes advantage of that microphone, and God, he probably just talked himself into another title fight.
he certainly. I think we're seeing Patricky at his peak now, which is not something I would have expected because he did have some issues, not too long ago in terms of sustainable success. And we have seen him at his best now. I think that's what we're getting out of Patricky Pitbull. The head-to-head clash certainly, I think, was a pretty big effect on Thompson really getting rocked there. He didn't really seem to return to form, and the fight was over. But the tide was clear what direction it was heading in, and it was heading into Patricky's favor. I mean, he was just beating Thompson at the punch. He was landing power strikes. He looks great. This was certainly the best performance I think we've seen out of Patricky Pitbull, especially when you take into account quality competition. And I do think the next time he fights, it is against Michael Chandler. He had to have done a lot. He had to do a lot to earn a title fight like that, both in terms of performance and in terms of post-fight interview. And for Patricky Pitbull, this was an A-plus on both sides. For Josh Thompson, I mean, this may be the last time we see him fight. It may, and he also will not be the only Josh where that's the case. I mean, Josh Koscheck, Jason, did not look great. He did not look great, and I kind of feel stupid that I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah, it's and I think you're, it wouldn't surprise me if both these guys, it's the last time we see them. I mean, for Josh, it's now six in a row he's lost. Koscheck hasn't won a fight since 2012. But you know, give credit to Alonzo there. You know, with the victory, a big victory by him. You know, Congo Thompson, not you know, I guess it's what we expected.
Wasn't a finish, Jason. It was not a Congo finish. I feel worse about not picking that decision.
I mean, but the Ortega Mayo fight, I mean, that was probably the fight of the night.
Brooke Mayo impressed the hell out of me, man. I mean, she was tough. Sure hurt. She had about half an eye left after this fight.
I mean, the whole, like, I can still, I mean, look, a fighter's going to want to fight regardless. But it's also like, no, there's a reason that doctor's there. He's looking out for the best, and it would not surprise me if when medical suspensions come out for this event, that it's like she's been indefinitely suspended for a possible eye injury.
Yeah, because like her eye was not in good shape, and I will say that she Brooke Mayo and Veda very much impressed me. I think you're going to see both these fighters again. And heading into this card, I was really down on this fight being on the main card. It just did not seem exciting. And it is something where you have the fight play out and you just change your perspective. You pivot. And my pivot is Mayo and Vitor Ortega was one of the more entertaining fights I think I saw this weekend. And I'm looking forward to watching them both fight again. I mean, at the end of the day, if you eliminate the cloud hanging around this card in terms of Fedor's fight not taking place, outside of the co-main event, I think you had a lot of good stuff in terms of just what took place in terms of excitement. I mean, the Alonzo Koscheck fight was exciting, as was Patricky Thompson. I mean, Tokov looked great. He had some issues early on against Kiko France, and then the women's fight was solid. I mean, the doo-doo in the punch bowl was obviously the co-main event, but top to bottom, there was a lot of enjoyment out of this card.
Two questions that we got in related to Bellator event, and go back to the what ended up being the main event with Pitbull and Thompson. Chris Conte asking, will Pitbull get the next title shot? Any interest in another Chandler fight? And should they have waited for Chandler versus Josh? I think we've talked a little bit about, you know, I think Pitbull's going to obviously be next up. But I do think Bellator really did make a mistake in not striking while the iron is hot with Josh Thompson and Michael Chandler.
Yeah, that's going to be clear. This was something that I have been beating this dead horse forever. That fight should have took place because Chandler Thompson, incredibly marketable. One of the top fights that could have done that division. A fight that likely would have been exciting, memorable, added some juice to Chandler, although he has plenty of things going for him. And why that fight needed to happen, it's very much like the Dan Henderson thing. While I think the Dan Henderson Michael Bisping fight should not have happened, because you know I think you need to earn fights to win a championship, it was smart to have that fight take place because Dan Henderson was not in a position where you can feel confident about him continuing to win against high level fighters given his age. That's the case with Thompson headed into it, and with this loss, I mean you can all but write off that fight from happening, and that's certainly a shame because I think the second Josh Thompson was signed by Bellator, the immediate thought was the Thompson-Chandler fight, and we're not getting it.
Yeah, we're not going to get that. The other question we got related to Bellator from at Guz Congo, how does tonight's show change the heavyweight title plans this year? I don't think it really changes the plans at all. You know, no one really gives you a definitive answer in terms of what they're going to do there. I mean, for a while you heard tournament. I would say this. I would just make Mitrione Fedor a title fight.
Yeah.
But I will say it was very interesting that Coker did bring up Vitaly Minnikov this past weekend. I don't think Vitaly Minnikov ends up back in Bellator. I think he's UFC bound. But it was interesting to hear Coker even just bring up Minnikov's name.
Yeah, I completely have written him off in terms of being any part of Bellator. I think if you're Minnikov, you haven't fought Bellator since 2014, to return would just be such a step back in terms of like you are putting yourself in a position to make the transition to the UFC. So he hasn't fought since June 2016. I don't really understand what his contract situation is, Jason. But, I mean, if Minnikov, I mean, he was the Bellator heavyweight champion. I feel like if he returns to Bellator, he has to be a part of the picture. I mean, that's when you begin to build the case around a heavyweight tournament. Scott Coker, not the greatest history with heavyweight tournaments. So with that being said, despite the fact that, you know, you have really started to get people excited about the idea of a heavyweight tournament, I think that result, like at this point in time, geez, if we do a heavyweight tournament, if they do a heavyweight tournament, there may not be a result until 2018. So might as well do a title fight for Mitrione and Fedor. So you at least have somebody wearing a championship belt in that division.
Yeah, it would make so much sense there. But, of course, Bellator does return this week as it'll be holding a card in Ireland for Bellator 173, a tape delay show headlined by Liam McGarry. Taking on Chris Fields, Liam McGarry was a guest on last week's edition of the Ameriport podcast, so you can check that out. We will not have a preview podcast for Bellator 173. The next preview podcast will come out here on March 3rd as we're going to preview UFC 209. Also on that one preview podcast, we will preview Bellator 174, which is going to be headlined by Marlos Kuhn and Julia Budd fighting for the inaugural Bellator women's featherweight title. But let's get back over to the UFC card. And I think the other top storylines for me coming out of this event was, man, how fun is Gavin Tucker to watch fight? You know, Sam Cilia really did not have an answer, could not land anything in the first two rounds. You know, it was interesting. I think this event, you look at two guys on this card that got into the UFC and not really based on their resume. You know, Gavin Tucker, yes, he's 9-0, but then when you look at the records of his last two opponents, not good records. And when you look at Ayman Zahabi, same type of situation, gets in there, doesn't exactly have the best resume in terms of his strength of opponents here, but he also gets a decision win there. But, you know, to me, Gavin Tucker, I mean, that's a guy that signed me up for next time he's fighting because he was just a fun guy to watch fight.
Yeah, man. I mean, Zahabi and Tucker both look solid. Definitely, though, got to give the edge to Gavin Tucker in terms of more impressive. I mean, for Zahabi, you did have some close rounds. I mean, well, a lot of the rounds were close against Reginaldo Vieira, but for Gavin Tucker, the rounds weren't close.
My thing with Zahabi is he's got to get better at his striking defense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to write that one off to debut, and then we'll recircle and return it and see what happens in the next fight. But I was probably more optimistic about Zahabi before his fight than after, which is not the best thing in the world. But at the end of the day, he did win. For Gavin Tucker, though, I'm much more excited after than before. I think I picked Cecilia in this one, and I feel pretty stupid about it because after the first round, it was kind of clear the direction this one was going in, Jason. Gavin Tucker just simply looked like the veteran, and this was his first fight. And Cecilia just was not able to piece together much. I mean, you had a lot of single strikes, and Tucker was really, really good. I thought he had a really nice post-fight interview as well. So anytime you have a debuting fighter, there's always the opportunity to make a statement, and I thought Gavin Tucker did. He's usually finished his fight. This one went the distance, but he made the most out of his opportunity, Jason, and he does not have a Wikipedia profile, but I assume the next time he fights, he will.
Sam Cilia getting another fight in the UFC? I say no.
Yeah,
I don't think so. Three straight losses. I think that he goes back on the regional scene.
I think so, too. I mean, there is a clear I don't know how they're doing. I know they're cutting back on events, but you see so many fighters leaving and fighters getting cut. This was a must-win for Cecilia, and he just did not get it.
When you talk about memorable performances from this fight card, Gerald Mershart kicked off the fight card. Beautiful armbar submission there in the first round. Thiago Santos with that spinning heel kick and finished it on the ground. I thought potentially a little bit of an early stoppage. You know, when that went down, I asked you know, my followers on Twitter if they thought it was an early stoppage, and pretty much everyone felt that it was early, but it was probably more the referee saving Jack Marshman than anything else.
Yeah, I have more issues with late stoppages than early ones. It probably was. I mean, especially given the context of Marshman looked great in that first round, but Santos rebounded. I mean, just a phenomenal spinning kick, and if you know that fight was not stopped, it probably would have been stopped 10 seconds later. Gerald Meerschaert, I mean, poor game plan by Ryan James in that fight. I feel like it was pretty clear that Gerald was going to be the better grappler. James takes him down, and then he gets submitted. So, you know, not the best strategy, I would say, out of Ryan James. But, yeah, Santos and Meerschaert were the two guys, you know, five fights in, those were the two that got the win. You know, also examining that prelim card, I think the story for me would be the Randa Marcos-Carla Esparza fight. I thought that one was pretty close.
I had it for Esparza, two rounds to one. But it's one of those things of, it's not a robbery. Mm-hmm. It's just a close fight. But you know, for Randa Marcos, and I saw some people going, you know, is Randa Marcos top three, top five? And I'm sitting there going, I can't put her up there. Yes, Esparza's a great win, but, you know, you can say she's consistent in the UFC, and the way she's consistent, it's win, lose, win, lose, win, lose, win. She's 3-3 in the UFC. And so I don't know where to rank her in terms of the top 10.
Yo, was Randa Marcos not in the top 15?
She was not. No, that was surprising to me.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to remember the last time she lost to Courtney Casey at UFC 202, as I recall it was, a submission loss there. I mean, and I guess you can say she's consistent, but she's got to start get a winning streak together before I think you can start calling her a top five fighter.
Yeah, I mean, look. A great win for Marcos. I felt like her back was against the wall in this fight. Like, she really needed a win here. But she was facing one of the top strawweights in the division. But, man, Carla Esparza, this was a brutal loss here. Because having watched this fight, I agreed that Esparza probably won it. But I felt generally that Carla Esparza was the better fighter. She just did not really exact herself. Like, she was not her best self, I think, standing. And then, like, when she got a lot of takedowns early on, she was really allowing Randa to score and return. And a lot of times, despite the fact that Carla Esparza was able to control where the fight took place, when she did control it, she didn't actually control it in terms of offense or defense. And I really felt like Carla Esparza's UFC run has really been a whole lot of disappointment in terms of, like, the ultimate upside of what her performances could have been. And I wouldn't be surprised if she rebounds and returns to form. But this was a brutal loss for her, despite the fact that she probably won on most people's scorecards. Just the fact this one was close in and of itself, it makes it brutal.
Yeah, and in terms of the rest of this card, the ones that stuck out to me, you mentioned Paul Felder, his TKO win. Sarah, man, you know, it was a fight where, you know, Sarah had nothing to gain in this fight, but she goes out there now two straight arm triangle choke submission wins for her. Raquel Pennington's recovering from torn labrum and a surgery she had for that. She's probably not going to be back till late this year. I mean, McMahon Pennington, I think, would be the fight to make as a number one contender fight, but because of Raquel's injury situation, maybe that doesn't make sense. But, you know, Sarah McMahon definitely it is right there. Elias Theodoro, a decision win over Cesar Fajeya. But the co-main event, you know, this was, I think you maybe even said it on the preview show, that this was kind of that ultimate crossroads fight for Johnny Hendricks and Hector Lombard. You know, I thought it was a 29-28 win for Johnny Hendricks. I didn't see the 30-27 scorecards. You know, obviously a huge win for Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah, man. Very, very excited to see this. I think I picked Lombard here. My general expectation was Hendricks was not going to be able to right the ship, and I was totally wrong. He looked renewed. I don't know if it was just one of those things where mentally he's like, I'm at 185 now and I feel better than ever and I'm so optimistic and it's going to work. And it did. He was the better fighter on the feet. He just had – it was almost like he drank out of a fountain of youth or something. And he just looked like a marketably different fighter than we had seen late in his run at welterweight. And it's probably 100% due to the weight cut. It's just a weight off his shoulders, literally. And we've seen – I mean, this was – you know, I mean, best case scenario is a finish, but Johnny Hendricks looks great here. I liked his post fight interview. It's good to see him finally happy. I always felt down when he was kind of all down and out about, you know, the weight cut and stuff. But Johnny Hendricks turned it around, Jason. Great win for him. Lombard, a tough one for Hector. You know, he's the type of fighter that heading into the UFC has not really lived up to expectations, but he still has showcased his talent level. But the story is simply Johnny back at middleweight. I'm not so sure how high he can climb the staircase, but a fight against Hector Lombard was not an easy one, and he passed it. But yeah, not a 30-27, despite the fact that two of the judges scored it for him, but he certainly won two of those rounds.
Lombard's probably done in the UFC. I gotta think he's gotta be done. You know, he's now 0-3, won no contest in his last four fights. I gotta think the UFC parts ways with him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's definitely what I would assume. I'm not so sure what his contract situation is like, but I do think he probably signed a pretty decent-sized contract originally, and he just hasn't really lived up. I mean, I think you could probably write him off in terms of UFC. It would be interesting to see if Bellator has any interest in, you know, reacquiring him.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But, you know, as I mentioned, you do have a Bellator fight card this weekend. No preview podcast coming on Friday. I'll be back in 2 weeks to preview UFC 209. Yeah, no UFC this weekend, Daniel. Saturday night, you can do whatever you want to do.
Oh, man, I think I'm just going to go and rewatch Bellator. just keep on watching Chris Fields and Dan McGarry.
I think I'm going to go to a soccer game on Saturday.
You going to watch what, Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Yeah, I believe they're playing an MLS team. The Rowdies are they're trying to get into the MLS.
Yeah, you know how many teams are trying to get into the MLS? Like 400.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of cities who are trying to get into the MLS. I mean they want to redo the stadium here, and you know, I don't know if Tampa can support an MLS team. Just being honest, I mean, the way the stadium is now, I mean, they pack it in at 5,000 people a game, but you know, all of a sudden, if you're trying to get 20,000, that's a big jump up, you know. And you know, Orlando's got an MLS team, which, you know, for me, it takes about an hour and 15 minutes to get to Orlando, so I don't know if that ends up happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could. When Tampa Bay is a marquee city, it's good. The Bucks, the Rays, still. I wouldn't be surprised, but I will say again, what I'm mentioning at here is like where I live in the Rio Grande Valley, we have a team that has real, real interest in becoming MLS franchise. The RGV Toro, they're in the league below them, the USL. But we are not the only. I mean, you have a lot of cities. I mean, there is a long list of.
I think it's like 10 cities, I think.
10 cities, and I think right now MLS has 22 teams. I think some teams are going to get in the fold next couple of seasons. I don't know where it ends. I think maybe 30. So there's, you know, soccer's growing in this country.
It is growing. I mean, and but 2 weeks we'll have you the preview show for UFC 209. Of course, Woodley Thompson, Nurmagomedov, and Ferguson also. Rashad Evans, Daniel Kelly, Lando Vannetta, and David Timor, which is going to be a part of the main card, of course, that Overeem Hunt matchup as well. So we'll have a preview podcast here coming up in 2 weeks for UFC 209. Of course, you can always listen to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search the MMA Report, also available on RadioInfluence.com. Be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at DanielCalvonPPG, and give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
You see the Grammys at all? You watch the Grammys?
Nope.
You don't watch the Grammys at all?
Nope.
A couple of three people got to lose their jobs. Okay?
Are going to lose their jobs?
Yes, 100%. Okay. So when my boy from Metallica comes up there with Lady Gaga,
oh, yeah,
and they don't turn his mic on.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Okay, so I watched that closely. I know what's going to happen.
Right.
And I'm watching. And he's, because my wife goes, doesn't he know he can't hear himself? I go, you can't hear yourself.
He's got his ear.
Yes, you hear yourself, you're in trouble.
Right.
So I go, he has no idea that that's not getting out to the masses. And he went up to it three times, okay? At the end, I had my eye on him the whole time. He took his guitar off his head and threw his guitar, which is probably very expensive, throws his guitar, knocks down the mic stand, and he was pissed. Like, these guys, somebody's, the only job was to make sure that sound was okay.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And you couldn't turn on a microphone?
Dude.
That was bad, bro.
That was
really bad.
It's like the Mariah thing that happened on New Year's where, you know, she said she couldn't hear her earbuds or whatever, and they kept saying that she didn't want to sound check beforehand, and this is why we're supposed to sound check.
Well, like, a lot of that's on Mariah. No, she didn't.
Well, she said she didn't. Or okay. That's who you're old.
Like Lady Gaga at the Super Bowl, I thought...
She didn't lip sync at all.
At the beginning, she did.
She may have because of where she was coming
from. Yeah, she was singing over a track, and then when she sat down, then she started to sing.
Right.
She can sing.
Sure. She can sing.
A lot of them can't.
Right.
At all, you know? Studio. Britney Spears ain't never, never...
Yeah, not a big fan.
One time, I took my daughter to see Hilary Duff. That was the worst
thing I feel bad for you.
I've ever heard in my life.
Hilary Duff.
That was the worst. She's the worst singer I've ever heard. That's hard to say. She had a concert, and she was the worst singer I ever heard.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.